This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The unemployment rate drops to 9%.
But January's job creation wasn't much to cheer about.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's February 4th. Happy Friday.
Coming up, what does all the turmoil in Egypt mean for Egypt's economy?
And David Brancaccio on German efforts to get more individuals to invest in the stock market. The German investment rate is about a quarter of the rate here in the United States.
But first to this morning's big jobs report from the Labor Department. The unemployment rate is down from 9.4% to 9%. That's the lowest in almost 2 years. But at the same time, the economy only created 36,000 jobs in January. Analysis in a moment. But first, Marketplace's Scott Tong digs into the numbers.
Okay, first the bad. 36,000 new jobs is downright weak, and a surprise to economic consultant Peter Cohen.
The 36,000 number sounds like it's way below what people expected, and that sounds kind of disappointing to me.
He figures hiring has slowed, though bad weather could foul up that number. On the smiley side, the unemployment rate fell to 9%, but Cohen thinks that number is artificially skewed, that more people are so discouraged they've quit looking, so they don't show up in that number. Still, a drop in the jobless rate feels good, and that matters, says Anthony Crescenzi at the bond firm PIMCO.
Brian Williams on the evening news will report tonight that the jobless rate fell, and Katie Kirk to 9%, and the public will feel better as a result.
It's not just about feeling better, he says. Americans more upbeat will go out and hunt for jobs. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
All right, let's get some analysis now from Gus Fauché. He is an economist at Moody's Analytics, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
So do you think that's true that tonight on the news, the newscasters are going to say the unemployment rate fell to 9% and everybody's going to feel good?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm an economist and not a psychologist, so I can't tell you how people are going to respond. What I do know is that the numbers were disappointing. The reason that the unemployment rate fell is that a lot of people gave up looking for work, probably because they're discouraged. And then the separate survey of employers found that the economy only added about 36,000 jobs or so. And that was very disappointing because we were expecting something closer to 160,000.
So does that mean that in the coming months, as people, these discouraged workers you talk about, come back into the labor force, that the unemployment rate's just going to skyrocket?
I think the unemployment rate is going to move higher over the first half of this year because we are going to have the millions of people who lost their jobs and have quit looking for work. As the economy gets better, they're going to come back into the labor market. So if the unemployment rate does move higher in early 2011, I take that as a good sign and not a bad sign.
And finally, Gus, I mean, did you see any sector of the economy that looks particularly good in this report?
Manufacturing added a lot of jobs. The manufacturing indicators were very positive for this month, and that's a sign that consumers are spending more and that the economy is strengthening.
Gus Fauché, economist at Moody's Analytics, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Let's get one more take on today's employment report from the Labor Department and bring in Jill Schlesinger, editor-at-large at CBS Money Watch. She's with us from New York, as she is every Friday. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning.
So, all right, still these few jobs being created, 36,000, lackluster number again, but the unemployment rate fell almost 0.5%. What's going on here?
Well, you know, these are two different surveys. When we talk about jobs added, it's a survey of businesses. When we talk about the unemployment rate, that's a survey from households. And so really what happens is sometimes these numbers get distorted because if people just stop looking for work, they're not included in the labor pool, and that can push down the unemployment rate, but not for the right reason.
All right. So this is like watching a glacier, though. I got to admit, I mean, why is this taking so long to turn the corner on jobs?
I think the biggest issue here is that while we have seen growth over the past 18 months, it has been so inconsistent. And when you look back over almost any three-month period, you can't find three consecutive months where we've had robust growth, that where we've seen great demand from consumers and from businesses. So as a business owner, you ask yourself, well, why am I going to take the risk of adding a new job when I don't know if next month's the bad month or the beginning of the next leg down? So I think we need consistent growth. That would go a long way into making employers feel more comfortable adding to their payrolls.
Consistency is the key, eh?
Absolutely.
All right, Jill Schlesinger, have a great weekend.
You too.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Friday, February 4th. I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. Now to the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world. The White House is talking with top Egyptian officials about ways to resolve that country's crisis. And that includes a possible immediate change in leadership. According to one bank estimate, the turmoil has cost the Egyptian economy at least $300 million a day. In closed businesses, internet commerce, and lost wages, too. The BBC's Magdi Abdelhadi is in Cairo, and he joins us now. Hi there.
Hello.
We've been hearing and seeing a lot about how foreign journalists are having a tough time doing their jobs there in Egypt. How are you doing?
You know, I come from this part of the world, so I don't look foreign, but once you're in the square, actually, that the protest movement started, and be surprised how welcoming the people are, especially for foreign journalists. I heard it with my own ears, saying we welcome foreign journalists because they tell the truth. But outside that area, of course, it is not entirely safe.
What about the banks over there that have been shut down now for a week? We're hearing that they're going to try and reopen this weekend on Sunday. Is that still the case?
They could let the country run again if they want to, if there is a political agreement at the top on how to proceed. And my reading of it, that there doesn't seem to be such an agreement. There is still a conflict of some kind of how to go ahead. The entire economy has more or less ground to a halt. This country relies, for example, to a great extent on tourism. I've spoken to middle-ranking businessmen who says, well, we're not doing anything. And hence the urgency of the state to try to get the economy going again, because it's in their best interest. But without a political will to find an acceptable solution, acceptable to the people who took to the streets, to the opposition, this may drag on for a while.
The BBC's Magdi Abdelhadi in Cairo. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, here in the U.S., about 45% of households own stock. But in Germany, that number is only 10%. Which is something the people who run the stock exchange there would like to change. Marketplace's David Brancaccio continues his Economy 4.0 series now about the changing global economy with this report from Munich.
Bernard Unemann is a journalist and a big name on Germany's financial TV channel. Viewers have a hunger for business news, he says, but not necessarily because Germans want to buy stock themselves.
Their investment is much more conservative. There are a lot of regrets.
Regrets about what happened the last time many Germans went gaga over stocks in the late 90s when their big phone company sold shares for the first time. Deutsche Telekom stock went up 700%. Germans also snapped up dot-com shares.
Definitely, they became interested, or they became greedy, whatever you prefer to say. And when the bubble burst, people lost a lot, some of them about 90% of their assets.
Since then, Germans have gravitated toward insurance products, often sold by local banks. But Rainer Ries, a managing director at the German Stock Exchange, argues that the financial turbulence in the last 2 years is why folks should diversify their portfolios with stocks.
So introducing more equity culture in Germany and in Europe in the widest sense is something that's absolutely necessary.
Stock Exchange is now promoting stock ownership through an online sweepstakes it conducts with the German newspaper Handelsblatt. Contestants begin with 20,000 euros in fake money and use real securities prices to trade online for 3 months. The latest winner is this young man, 30-year-old Klaus Neukert of Munich.
So how did you do?
1.4 million.
1.4 million euros.
Yes. Unbelievable.
He's no rube off the street. Neukert is a bond expert at a major bank and used derivatives to win the contest. His prize, a sweet Porsche 911 Carrera. If only he can find a way to pay for the car's insurance, about $9,000 a year in real cash. In Munich, I'm David Brancaccio for Marketplace.
And there's more on the German economy on David's Economy 4.0 blog at marketplace.org.
Well, the banana wars, Jeremy, have finally come to an end. I know you were waiting
for Good.
I
didn't know they were going on.
Yes, absolutely. Bringing a long-awaited peace between Europe and the Americas. The European Parliament has voted to make it easier for American banana growers to sell that fruit to Europe. Reporter Christopher Worth has more from London.
Maybe you didn't know it, but the U.S. and Europe have been at war for nearly two decades, a war over bananas. Europe buys more bananas than any other market and had offered benefits to former colonies in Africa and the Caribbean to sell their bananas to Europeans. That angered Latin American producers, many of them American-owned companies such as Dole and Chiquita. But not everyone is happy the war has ended. Ariely Walker of the Fair Trade Foundation says the decision to level the playing field may lower prices, but it will also hurt small farmers.
Our major concern is whether these price reductions will translate into improved working conditions on the farm, or whether, in fact, it will just create a race to the bottom.
In compensation, Europe's former colonies will receive around $270 million to help them adjust to the newfound peace and stiffer competition. In London, I'm Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
A group in Finland has claimed responsibility, Jeremy, for stealing a statue of Ronald McDonald from a Helsinki McDonald's.
Huh.
Yeah. This is the Food Liberation Army that put out a YouTube video showing the ceramic fast food mascot being held hostage with a bag over its head.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, the captors demand the company answer questions about corporate responsibility, but we've not yet heard from Mayor McCheese on the issue.
I bet there's a stakeout going on at his house.
Or Grimace or the Hamburglar, too. So. You're listening to the Midday Update for Friday, the 4th day of February. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles and on Twitter at Radio Chio.
I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York on Twitter at Jeremy Hobson. You can also give us your feedback by going to marketplace.org and clicking on the link that says contact.
Well, the lights are back on in Texas this morning after rolling blackouts cut power to nearly 1.5 million households earlier this week. Officials say cold weather there caused more than 50 power plants to fail, leaving the state's grid system with little juice to feed demand. The problem's been solved, but not without a lot of money spent. From station KUT in Austin, Erica Aguilar reports.
Power plants have been working overtime since Wednesday to keep the state from implementing more blackouts. At one point, Mexico was sending electricity to Texas. Trip Doggett manages the state's power grid.
The price in certain intervals was $3,000 per megawatt hour.
The average price this time of year is less than $100 per megawatt hour. So who pays for the extra cost? Doggett fielded that question at a press conference Thursday.
It actually gets passed to what we refer to as a retail electric provider.
In other words, utilities. So would that cost ultimately shift down to customers?
Ultimately, that would.
Texas officials continue to ask people to cut back on energy. The grid still lacks enough power for 600,000 homes. Snow and low temperatures are expected to linger through today. In Austin, I'm Erica Aguilar for Marketplace.
According to the latest tally from the Census Bureau, women own less than 30% of the nation's businesses. Well, today, the Small Business Administration is taking a step to up that number by helping women-owned businesses win government contracts. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has more.
Say I own a small business. Let's call it Marshall-Genzer Enterprises. Starting today, I can certify online that my business is owned by a woman. For the first time, federal contracting officers are actually setting aside contracts for certified women-owned companies. The penalties for a business that misrepresents itself on a government website have been strengthened. SBA spokeswoman Haley Medvin says it'll be easier for the government to prove fraud.
it gives the federal government a little bit of teeth to really make sure that these small business contracts are flowing to the intended recipients.
The SBA will also be on the lookout for corporations that use women-owned companies as fronts to get government contracts. There's just one problem. There aren't enough government workers overseeing the contracts. Allison Stanger is an economist at Middlebury College.
And if you want to insist that the law be upheld, you've got to have the bodies there doing it.
Stanger says in some cases, government contractors are overseen by other contractors in Washington. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Voters in Missouri last year passed a new law setting tougher rules for the state's dog breeders. Well, now some state lawmakers have filed a bill seeking to overturn that law, which they say restricts a growth industry in the state. From St. Louis Public Radio, Adam Allington reports.
Among dog breeders, the state of Missouri is labeled by many as the puppy mill state. It's a reputation that carries some truth. The Department of Agriculture estimates that 30% of all puppies sold in America, some 750,000 dogs, come from Missouri. Sally Rector breeds Jack Russell Terriers. She's a relatively small operation with just 8 breeding dogs.
Right there, that's Cooper. Then next to him is Ace. Then I have Reno.
Rector voted against Proposition B, also known as the Puppy Mill Cruelty Prevention Act. Among other things, the law requires dogs be given fresh food and water daily, limits the number of dogs to 50, and regulates the size of the enclosures they're kept in. Rector says the rules are vague and set a standard that might eventually apply to all animals, including livestock.
You know, who's a puppy mill? Who's got too many pigs or who's got too many horses? Or is that horse's stall big enough? I think that's just a beginning. We don't need any more government regulation.
Opponents say Prop B only passed because of an ad campaign depicting images of sick dogs from a few isolated cases. Republican State Senator Bill Stoffer says the measure won't change anything and will only hurt ethical breeders.
My concern is that we will make it impossible to legally raise dogs in the state of Missouri, and we will drive more dogs underground and create a bigger problem than we have now.
Barbara Schmitz is the director of the Humane Society of Missouri.
I think that the economic arguments are on our side.
Schmitz says the process of churning out puppies as a cash crop invariably leads breeders to cut corners.
And those corners are translating into a burden for consumers who buy sick puppies, a burden on humane societies who literally spend millions every year cleaning up after this industry.
As far as repeal is concerned, Schmitz says overturning a direct vote of the people is something all politicians should think long and hard about. On this issue, she says, the dogs have won. In St. Louis, I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
And finally, do you like dumb burglar stories, Steve?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There are so many, too.
There are so many. There's one a day. But here's a good one. In Silver Spring, Maryland, a power outage. There was a power outage there, I assume, because maybe there was a storm or something like that.
Perhaps.
But there was a power outage, and this young man broke into someone's home and wanted to charge his phone. But he also wanted to steal some jewelry from there. So according to the Washington Post, the burglar was discovered in mid-burgle. And he ran out of the house, but he forgot his phone. And so, of course, the authorities went and they used his phone to track him down. And they've also charged him with 10 other burglaries in the area. I assume if they were able to use his phone, that means he doesn't have AT&T as a service provider.
So he and his phone got charged.
So. There you go. Why don't you write for me next time? In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great weekend. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.